You're listening to a podcast from the Brookings Institution.
Okay, well, good morning. My name is Stephen Piper. I am a senior fellow here at the Center on the United States and Europe at Brookings. And it's my pleasure to welcome you all to today, and in particular to welcome the Foreign Minister of Lithuania, Mr. Andrius Ažubalis, to Brookings. He's agreed to come and take some time to share his thoughts on both the challenges and the opportunities that face Lithuania as it takes on two very prominent positions in 2011. Lithuania will become the chairman in office of the Organization for Security and Cooperation in Europe, and it also will assume the chairmanship of the Community of Democracies. And I think all this is sort of perhaps getting ready for 2013, when Lithuania will assume the presidency of the European Union. Needless to say, these positions reflect a couple of things. First of all, it's the growing maturity of democracy within Lithuania, but also its growing capacity to play a leading role in international institutions. And all this takes place less than two decades after Lithuania renewed its independence. And if you look at the progress Lithuania has made in that period, it really is remarkable. The Lithuanians have built a strong, democratic market economy. They've integrated their country into the North Atlantic Treaty Organization and the European Union, and they are playing an increasingly robust role as a transatlantic partner. I think the chairmanships of the Organization for Security and Cooperation in Europe and the Community of Democracies that will be assumed by Lithuania are going to present a challenge and a test for Lithuania's leadership. But I'm also very confident that Lithuania will meet those tests very successfully. I look forward to hearing the comments by the minister. You have his full biography, so I'm not going to go through his many accomplishments in the fields of publishing, journalism, politics, and foreign affairs, but it truly is a distinguished record. I'm also very happy that today we have two outstanding panelists, and I might say former colleagues, Ambassador Nancy McEldowney, who is the Principal Deputy Assistant Secretary of State in the Bureau of European and Eurasia Affairs, and among her many areas of responsibility, that includes the OSCE, and Ambassador Julie Finley, who spent 4 years in Vienna as the American Permanent Representative to the OSCE. Our plan for today is we'll invite the minister to speak from the podium. We'll then have comments from Ambassador McEldowney and Ambassador Finley, and then we'll open it up to a moderated discussion. So, Mr. Minister, we're very glad that you could come to Brookings, and the floor is yours.
Ladies and gentlemen, dear friends, thank you for coming and giving your time to listen to my observations. Where are the frontiers of Europe? What should become of frontiers of Europe? These are a few questions that international relations experts debate over and over. It is a particular pleasure to speak on this subject here at the Brookings Institution, which was at the forefront of a European recovery program, administering the Marshall Plan contributions to Europe. Indeed, the process of changing definitions and placement of European frontiers, both external and between the European countries, is full of challenges. Baron Katten contributed to the division of Europe. Now, the united and transparent Europe is faced with new challenges. These are the old frozen conflicts, new emerging conflict spots, and threats ranging from terrorism, cyber attacks, to threats against the energy security of EU and NATO members. The very existence of these threats contributes to uncertainty and encourages anti-democratic tendencies in regions most affected. Lithuania, with its millennium long history, has literally been on both sides of this debate. Our historical experience of being at the fringes of Europe, beyond the Iron Curtain, and within the European Union and NATO, gives us a unique perspective which I would like to share with you today. Our history began with the emergence of the Lithuanian Kingdom in the 13th century. Then from the 15th century, Lithuanian Jogaila dynasty in union with Poland was ruling vast territories of current Central and Eastern Europe. As John Paul II was once saying, it was the origin of current European Union, because the main principles of this union were pluralism, tolerance, openness, and multi-ethnicity. Today we support these principles and values in our regional cooperation by being an active proponent of enhanced Nordic-Baltic cooperation, which could serve as a model to others. The prioritizing of the Nordic-Baltic community is based upon three essential elements. First, branding of the Nordic-Baltic region. Second, promoting of a great economic and political Nordic-Baltic cooperation. And third, establishing a common Nordic-Baltic information space. Lesson we have learned during our complicated history is the following. If democracy and freedom is in trouble, we are in trouble and Europe in trouble. Therefore, pursuit of democracy is embedded in the priorities of Lithuania's foreign policy today, as we chair the Global Community of Democracies and prepare to preside in the OSCE and in the European Union. Now a few words about Community of Democracies. Currently, Lithuania chairing this organization. Our mission as a chairman of COD is to provide support for the democratic institutions building around the world. It would be a great mistake to take democracy, freedom, and Europe for granted. I just want to draw your attention to some facts. Concept of democracy and freedom itself today is under attack. Each day in our transatlantic capitals, we are struggling to get democracy back in our foreign policy or development policy agendas. Second, pragmatic engagement with autocracies is just a fashion of today, with no serious regard to basic freedoms and respect for human dignity in those countries. Third, democracy building efforts in emerging democracies have been reduced dramatically. We have no focus, no strategy. We cut spending for democracy infrastructure on global scale. And the fourth, autocracies are uniting. They are getting wiser and they use very postmodern instruments to influence democracies. From energy dependency to corruption, from attacks to civil society to undermining media and internet freedom. Maybe I'm painting too gloomy picture. But I do believe that we should not be complacent with our democratic acquis. I am convinced that the community of democracies can serve as an effective tool of achieving the synergies and democratic outreach on a global scale. First of all, we have to acknowledge that we are in trouble. Our transatlantic stability is endangered in the long term. We have to consolidate the will of democracies in the world to make this world better. We have to reform the community of democracies in a way it becomes more and more relevant and effective tool to consolidate our democratic achievements over the last two decades. Focusing on concrete deliverables, be it civil society, women and democracy agenda, parliamentary democracy or youth, we could still make the difference. Before Vilnius 2011 Community of Democracies Ministerial, we will try to expand group of the most devoted countries on democracy to make our common endeavor as much coordinated as possible. A few words about OSCE. The OSCE summit is to pave the way for the vision of a Euro-Atlantic and Eurasian security community. Astana summit needs to reaffirm OSCE acquis and participating states' commitments. Then, as the chairmanship of Organization for Security and Cooperation in Europe in 2011, we should aim at putting the summit decision into practice. The litmus test for the security community being born in Astana will come with a test of the wills on the so-called protracted conflicts. The conflict, the war in Georgia, I would say, in 2008, and the crisis this year in Kyrgyzstan put the OSCE under the international spotlight. The protracted conflict in Transnistria will not go away tomorrow. I believe the Minsk group can maintain greater momentum in driving a negotiated political settlement in Nagorno-Karabakh. As the chairman in office, I will work with partners to make real progress, be it slow or minimal, in those conflict situations. Rebuilding trust and confidence between societies, shoring up economic rehabilitation, and solving humanitarian issues are of a key importance. It is important to beef up the OSCE's crisis management capabilities. The respect of the human rights and fundamental freedoms remain essential for development of democratic societies. Freedom of media, safety of journalists will be on the agenda of the Lithuanian chairmanship. We need further strengthen the role of the civil society. The freedom of movement contributes to that as we know it from our own experience. We need to define the role of the OSCE in the field of energy security, enhance transparency and early warning capabilities. We will also focus on supporting regional cooperation initiatives. We see the need for strong engagement between regional actors in developing confidence and good neighborly relations, enhancing energy security, facilitating transportation and cross-border movements. It is important for the security community also to address transnational threats, cybersecurity, drugs, extremism and terrorism. Such threats undermine the security of Central Asia, Afghanistan, and the OSCE region as a whole. The Astana Summit is an opportunity to gear up the OSCE to tackle the problems in a comprehensive manner. Now about European Union. Europe today needs to be reinvented. Lack of ideas feeds pragmatism, not balanced by values. It took a decade for Europe to debate its own mission, and this debate is still not finished. Due to begin in the second half of 2013, Lithuanian presidency will pay special attention to the creation and sustainability of freedom, security, and justice in Europe. We will seek to ensure a proper and efficient management of migration flows and external borders. In this task, Lithuania sees a strong need to enhance cooperation with the EU eastern neighbors outside the framework of the European neighborhood policy. To support the European aspirations and integration processes of these states, and to seek the perspective of a further approximation of the countries into the EU. One of the key elements of our contribution to the EU foreign policy will be to ensure the closest possible transatlantic cooperation for the development of security and stability in EU neighborhood. We have to redefine our strategic missions with regard to emerging democracies and to help them seriously, including in Europe's East, countries like Ukraine, Moldova, Caucasus Republics, Belarus, could still become full-fledged members of the European family. I really hope that the next year during Hungarian and Polish EU presidencies, we'll be able to agree on EU membership perspective for our Eastern European neighbors. That will extend our four freedoms to those countries without delay, of course, demanding in return clear efforts of modernization and full transformation of their societies into European one. This will create the sense of mission again. European family of nations has the right to be reunited. Our strong priority will be the development of EU common energy policy, with a goal to strengthen the external energy security of EU member states through the construction of power links, elimination of energy isolation. Now about security and stability. Our own experience makes us strong believers that the value-based European integration process and NATO enlargement was essential for the democratization and stabilization of Europe. Strong and stable Europe is an important partner and even role model for global stability and security as well. This November, in Lisbon summit, NATO leaders will launch a new strategic concept, which will reflect the guidance for our enlarged alliance. A strong emphasis on collective defense and deterrence, continued open-door policy and partnership should remain the primary task of NATO in pursuit of Europe whole and free. NATO will also need to do more to enhance its crisis management capabilities and make additional efforts in preparation to face cyber threats, threats to energy security, and terrorist attacks. As NATO goes global, we should not forget that the business is not yet over in NATO's vicinity either. Despite the enormous progress made towards integration in Europe in recent years, beyond our frontiers there is still what we could call be an aspiring Europe. Our neighbors and partners to the east who so far not able to take their part in free Europe. Relations with Russia are very important and will feature high on Lisbon's agenda. Lithuania believes in an open dialogue and engagement with Russia on all issues, but we have to make it a teamwork. It will take a lot of time and patience is the sister of hope. If we hurry too much, if we continue just on bilateral platforms, if we sacrifice our values and principles, we lose Russia, this great country, as a part of the European family. And we don't want this to happen. Russians are deeply European, and it's our mission to make them feel at home. But we have to work together. Nevertheless, major disagreements remain with Russia on such issues as implementing commitments in Georgia, making further progress on conventional forces agreement, or accepting right of European countries to join NATO. Particularly, 2008 war in Georgia has raised serious concerns about Russia's dedication to the principle of a peaceful resolution of remaining conflicts. We are also concerned with Russia's military doctrine, where NATO is still perceived as a threat. On special note, Belarus is an important and at the same time often a challenging neighbor country for Lithuania and the EU. We're still looking forward to the day when Belarus finally takes its full-fledged place in the democratic European family. But also, we shouldn't just simply wait. First of all, we should not give up in supporting, unfortunately, still divided opposition in this country and patiently try to consolidate it. We have to cooperate with official authorities, constantly pressing and reminding them unconditional need to adhere to democratic principles and values. Rising social pressure as a result of a recent economic crisis, the decline of democracy and human rights globally and in close vicinity of Europe should be perceived by us as a serious warning. It is evident that there is no quick fix to these problems, and partial responses by individual nations or their groups are not sufficient. In this sense, the European frontiers are also the United States frontiers. This was well understood at the time of the Marshall Plan. Yet it is also relevant today as global challenges and threats arise to our common values of democracy, human rights, and individual liberty. And finally, I have a dream of a single transatlantic area of our four European freedoms. People, services, capital, and goods, with all new areas of cooperation like innovations, energy, and cybersecurity to be in place as soon as possible. With our students, academics, and NGO societies united in action. We will not survive if we stay alone. And when we unite, we have to expand our area of freedom and democracy worldwide. Europeans and Americans are setting an example today for the world that could be a better place to live. If we are not successful, we will witness alternatives. We in the Baltics do not want these alternatives coming back again. Thank you for your kind attention.
Okay, Mr. Minister, well, first of all, thank you for getting off to a great start today. Let me offer Ambassador McElderne the opportunity to make a few comments.
Thank you very much. First, I have to say it is an honor to share this podium with you, and it was an inspiration to hear your remarks. They were extremely eloquent and articulate, but also inspiring in terms of the vision that you have laid out, and I'm delighted to endorse every single thing that you said. Thank you very much for that. I'd also like to start by just signaling a couple of things for the group here. One, Mr. Minister, based on the course of your visit here and the things that have happened, it is very, very strong and tremendously fulfilling evidence for us of the relationship between the United States and Lithuania, of the very strong partnership that we have. Secretary Clinton was delighted to host you at the State Department yesterday, and your entire program here in Washington, I think, gives proof to what we have been building on a bilateral basis between our two countries. It also, though, and if I can underscore your speech, it reinforces what we have been saying about Lithuanian leadership. Through your chairmanship of the Community of Democracies, taking over the OSCE chairmanship in office next year, looking to the EU presidency in 2013. Those are tremendous opportunities. Steve characterized them as challenges. I am certain they are challenges that you will seize and conquer, and we are delighted to support you in that. I'm pleased to see so many people braved the weather to join us today. And despite the weather, I think this is a very timely conversation for us to have, both in the context of what we are trying to achieve in our relationship together with Lithuania, but across the board for Europe and the Eurasian community. You all know that in just a few days in Lisbon, a number of major events will take place. The minister referred to some of them, and I'd like to go through a couple others. Later this week, the United States will participate in four summits that are happening in Lisbon, and each of them are marking transition into a new phase. The 28 NATO allies will convene, and they will mark NATO's transition into the 21st century, a new vision for how we're going to take the alliance forward, both with a strategic concept that will lay out this path and with the development of new capabilities that will give life to that vision and help us carry it forward. Secondly, NATO will sit down with Russia, and we will talk with our Russian partners about how to develop a new relationship between NATO and Russia. I'm seeing old friends in the audience. And how to build a more mature relationship. And we can come back and talk about that. But it is my belief that, as the minister has talked about, Russia finding its role in the European family as part of this broader community that we are trying to build across the Eurasian continent. Thirdly, there will be a summit of ISAF leaders, and we will mark the transition of the ISAF engagement in Afghanistan into the next phase. We are looking at a progression of transition to Afghan control, Afghan authority, responsibility for its own security, and that too is a crucial step into the next process that we are launching. And then lastly, fourth, in terms of our Lisbon agenda, the United States and the European Union will sit down, excuse me, for the first post-Lisbon Treaty summit, when the U.S. and the EU presidencies will sit together and chart a pathway forward for the new relationship that we see between the two, the U.S. and the European Union. OSCE and the summit that will take place in Astana is a part of this, both in terms of transition, because as the minister has very eloquently laid out, we are looking at the next phase, where OSCE can go, what it can do to increase its effectiveness and address the problems that we face, but also because the OSCE is a part of these interlocking structures. NATO, it's the foghorn from the weather. NATO, or it's not me. NATO, the European Union, and the OSCE across the board are working together. We each have different parts of the agenda. Let me just say a couple more words about this, and then I'm very eager to hear from Ambassador Finley, because she was also at OSCE during a crucial time in its past. But just a few words about the Astana summit to supplement what the minister had laid out. Two things in particular that I would flag about the OSCE summit in Astana. First, as you know, it is the 35th anniversary of the Helsinki Final Act. And this summit in Astana will serve both to mark that anniversary, but also to note the progress that has been achieved since then and the problems that have occurred and that persist. And it also goes to the point that the minister made about the fact that we are not done. We have not achieved our goals everywhere we need to, and we are committed, and that summit will be an opportunity for us to reaffirm our commitment to work together to try to achieve those goals. But secondly, in addition to the Helsinki anniversary commemoration, we will lay out an action plan in Astana, and our hope, our intention for this action plan is to identify the priority areas of work that we want to undertake and for the leaders to come together and give a strong impulse for the work that lies ahead. This action plan will cover all dimensions of OSCE work, all three of the main dimensions, but there are some that I would flag and that we are particularly interested in seeing advancement on. Let me mention just a few. One is military transparency. And while OSCE is an organization that I think it's telling me I need to be briefer. That is, OSCE is an organization that touches on all aspects of security, not just the military dimension. We want to make sure that that is addressed, and there are important steps that we can take to improve military transparency. But we also want to make sure, as the minister underscored, that OSCE increases its capacity for crisis response, crisis prevention, and crisis resolution. Those crisis capabilities, as we have seen in Georgia, as we have seen in Kyrgyzstan, as unfortunately but inevitably we will see elsewhere, we need to make sure that we are doing everything we can to enhance our capacity to deal with that. But we also want to acknowledge the very enormous challenge that sits just on the border of the OSCE area, and that is Afghanistan. And we want to take steps for OSCE to contribute to a better future for Afghanistan and also to ensure that the issues that extend from Afghanistan, whether it's counter-narcotics, human trafficking, other problems, are addressed. And we are looking together at what we can do on that front. And, of course, energy security, as the minister has mentioned, is a very important one. And the hallmark of OSCE, which has been the work of ODIHR in field missions, election monitoring, media freedom, and building tolerant societies, those are some of the elements that we will be trying to stress as we work together toward the goal that the minister articulated, and thank you for saying it this way, his dream of a Euro-Atlantic and a Eurasian community, a security community, in which people are not just free of threat, but also confident that they're living in a society where their basic human rights are protected, where they have democratic systems, and where they have tolerant societies. That's what OSCE can bring to us and we are thrilled to have the opportunity to support your chairmanship as you take this organization and that dream forward. So thank you very much, Mr. Minister.
Thank you.
Thank you, Nancy. Ambassador Finley?
I'm scared to death to follow you. And I'm really scared to follow you. I cannot improve on the eloquent description you made of your eloquence, Mr. Minister. I am in total agreement with everything you said. I thought everything was beautifully expressed and a dream to certainly work for. And it is always of great comfort to hear a confirmation that there are other countries out there that want to support the spread of democracy throughout the realm, so to speak. I'm certainly not going to go through what you have just gone through, and I'm certainly not going to go through, but I'm much more a specificity person, and we'll go after particular points that I think need attention. I would first suggest that you have a wonderful person who I worked with in Vienna who will be handling affairs, and I'm particularly pleased that Renatus Norkus will stay in Vienna to handle this, because I believe very strongly that persons in positions are very important. And I think you all will be going through the Secretary General change.
Yes.
And that is very important, because that brings that is an opportunity for a person of great character, wisdom, and weight, gravitas, to aid the spread and the development of what you would like to achieve, not only during your chairmanship, but to see through
Absolutely. The
organization to the future. It is extremely heartening to me that Secretary Clinton has the respect for and interest in multilateral organizations that she has and that this administration has. It seems perfectly elemental to me, elementary, that it is better to talk, than in any way, shape, or form pick up an arm. And boy, that is what you do in Vienna, is talk, and you have acknowledged the patience quality, and I would suggest somebody make you a calendar that you can just rip off saying 364 days left, 363 days left, because it will get to be, if only managing the often the great differences that the Russian Federation and the United States have and go at with each other in the Permanent Council. Balancing that relationship in this organization is very, very difficult. With regard to what you have to say about the unresolved conflicts, I expect that my grandchildren will be working on Nagorno-Karabakh, and I don't even have them yet. And I remember I went in August of 08 and of 05, and I remember in October of 05, Ambassador Steve Mann, who was then our representative to the Minsk group, spent the night with me in Vienna and said, "We're going to fix Nagorno-Karabakh by March." Well, this is one of the strengths or weaknesses of any multilateral organization. You just keep talking, and we will. I admire your optimism, but don't go to the bank on solving these conflicts. Save the money for your children's college education. I always thought, and I still think, that it would be interesting for the OSCE, which needs a little jazzing up, if you will, to think about some things that don't have just to do with human rights, although I think one should be extremely concerned about moving human rights off to the side, sort of off of center stage. It's not just because the United States belongs to this organization for pretty much the sole reason of its concern for human rights, but it is a fact that, as you referred to, that dimension is meeting with defeat in many parts of the world now that wasn't true 5 years ago. It wasn't even true 8 years ago. There was progress being made. But look what has happened to the journalists in Moscow, for example. And look everywhere in this business of Aung San Suu Kyi. That's window dressing. I fully expect that poor woman to be back in house arrest. Anyway, so it's important for that. But at the same time in this organization, for you to look at different things. Now, how about looking at completing the Mediterranean Partnership? How about looking at Libya? As soon as we got through the Bulgarian nurse problem, then Libya became sort of an interesting idea to join the partnership, because you want the camel in the tent, not just wandering around out there. You have referred to the, you have mentioned the EU situation, which is really difficult because for the United States, it is dealing with, in my view, while it is made of many countries, it is like its own country. And the relationship the United States needs to have in an organization like the OSCE and even the COD has to be almost bilateral rather than multilateral. Is it possible, in your view, to actually get basket number two in the OCE up to speed? Mm-hmm. Is it possible to equalize the baskets? I'm not sure about that. I would just say you have, while you have a huge amount ahead of you, you seem to have thought and expressed beautifully how you're going to, what your goals are, and the specifics we will see as you perform, but I have every confidence that that will go ahead, and now you may have something you want to say.
Thank you.
All right. Well, why don't we go ahead and open up the floor to questions. If you could please wait for a microphone, state your name and affiliation, and have a question mark at the end of what you say. Also, I would ask, unfortunately, we're going to lose Ambassador McEldowney at 10 o'clock. She has to go back to the department for summit preparations for Lisbon. So if there's any particular question to Ambassador McEldowney, you should get that in early. Let's start over here, please.
Elizabeth Pond, freelance author and journalist in Berlin, Germany. To the foreign minister, and perhaps also to Nancy McEldowney, you haven't mentioned anything about the Medvedev initiative on changing the security system in Europe in the direction of the OSCE. And I wonder if you might comment on that. Is that off the table? Is it going to be discussed at all? Just if you could have any comments. And then second, a more intangible question, but a very important one, and that is, to the minister, how much are you cooperating with the Poles in the presidencies of OSCE? And in particular, I ask this because in the spectrum of between, let's say, a strong emphasis on freedom and democracy that you have championed and pragmatism, which was a little bit of a dirty word in your presentation of it, it seems that the Poles have shifted in the last, who have been very, very critical of the Russians in the past, that they have shifted somewhat more under the Tusk government and also in the intellectual discussion in Wyborcza and elsewhere in the direction of pragmatism. And I wonder how this, how you see this balance, how this balance is seen in Lithuania and in Poland.
Ambassador, no? Corfu?
Sure, I'm happy to. Beth, it's nice to see you again, and thank you very much. She always asks the best questions, and thank you for reminding us about the Medvedev proposal for a European Security Treaty. You are right to ask about it, and one of the elements that I believe weaves through what you heard from all of us is the desire to build a genuinely cohesive community. The minister used the word European family. And to a large extent, what I see having happened since President Medvedev put his proposal for a European Security Treaty on the table is that the dialogue that ensued has gone very much in the direction of what President Medvedev, or at least partially what President Medvedev had in mind. He explained his proposal at the time, and I think we have some Russian colleagues here who could also speak to this issue. But what Medvedev said at the time was that he wanted to ask the question about how the institutions that exist today are bringing us together to meet our goals. And that, it seems to us, is a very legitimate dialogue for us to have. The OSCE, in response to that, launched the Corfu process that has been underway now for over a year, in which all of the OSCE states have come together with ideas, different proposals that have been put on the table, and frankly have come up with a number of what I think are very constructive and productive ideas. And we hope that we will launch many of them in the action plan that can then be brought to life under Lithuania's chairmanship. So while we said at the time and continue to believe that a legally binding treaty, which is the form of the Medvedev proposal initially, is not something that we need or want, we are very interested in talking through some of the basic premises of all of our institutions, and most importantly, how we can bring reality to the rhetoric behind a Euro-Atlantic and a Eurasian community that really is stable and is secure and is going in the right direction that we've talked about.
I just would like to add a few things. I'm not mentioned the Corfu process, not because it's not important, but if you would see the whole complexity, what's going on now between the Russia and the EU and the United States, if you would take all these meetings, the forthcoming Lisbon meeting, it includes all ideas presented by Medvedev, President Medvedev. That's what I think that we should see wider. When we are talking, for example, about crisis prevention mechanism, which we have an ambition to propose at the end of our chairmanship as a draft, I hope, this is also the part of a security, Eurasian security mechanism, if we will succeed. That's what it stays on agenda. It's just, I would say, demo, kaip pasakyti. It's just one piece of whole picture, where, of a whole arena where we're working and trying to find the place, and for Medvedev proposals, and for other countries' aspiration for security, predictability, and cooperation. The second thing you asked me about situation in Poland, I think that now we have a pre-election situation, which is heated by politicians. I think it's a normal. The second thing, we see there's some kind of warming signs between the Poland and Russia, and we welcoming this because I think it could positively affect the trust and security environment in the region in general. But this is a process. We are very, how would say, we are not going to label now. It's a pure pragmatism. The Poles are losing values or something. We are just following very carefully and very deeply. And also from our side, we also, I would say, working with Russia very intensively. I must say that after 2 years of break, we got the intergovernmental commission meeting, which I'm chairing, presiding from Lithuania side, and from Russia side was presided by Mr. Levitin, Minister of Transport. We now discussed, almost finished 5 agreements with Russia, still 12 left. Now we're on the Russia side. It means that I think somehow I don't see now from Russia side and from Lithuania side, let's say, the traditional so-called media battle. We lowered our tones, and I think it's good. We are now working. And sometimes, of course, the opposition said, hey, where is this, Cold War warrior Zhubalis? Why he is now keep silence? You know, but my answer is very simple. I'm working very, very hard with my friends from Russia and with Poles as well, trying to get best results. It's a constant process. It's a never-ending story. You always should be, as a member of the EU, it's also constant negotiations. Yeah, it's also, if you want to peace, if you want good cooperation with neighbors, you always should be in office, let's say so.
I just want to add one thing to that. I think some Americans should get over being nervous about talking to CSTO and the Shanghai Cooperation. I think that those organizations, which for many Americans make them nervous, just get over it. We're big enough to talk to practically anybody. And I think that would help in the Russian.
Let me ask a follow-up question on this idea of European security architecture. And it really goes back to the speech that President Medvedev gave back, I guess, in Berlin in the summer of 2008, where he talked about this new European security treaty. And he said, when you look at the institutional architecture of Europe, something's missing from the Russian point of view. I think the response of a lot of people in the West is, well, no, in fact, when you look at the institutional structures in Europe, you've got NATO, the European Union, the OSCE, the structures there. It's a question, really, of using those structures better. Of course, Russia is only in one of those, in the OSCE, and I think if you look over the last 7 to 8 years, the OSCE probably has lost some of its ability to play the role, and in part due, I think, to Russian policy. I mean, it's devalued the OSCE. But I guess the question would be, is looking to 2011, are there things that you see that could be done with OSCE to make it a stronger organization, restore some of its vitality, and then maybe make that part of the answer to the Russian question for this broader European security dilemma that they see?
I would say that I'm not going, Lithuania is not going to open so-called new page in OSCE because it would be too... It would be, to believe in that, it would be not serious. But what we are going to be very transparent, to be very good willing to talk with holes, and to try to find the common ground for players, for members of our organization as much as possible. And we are now finding some, common spaces and common players. Let's take Central Asia. We found the agreement with Russia to work very hard on how to move the counter-narcotics problem. Mm-hmm. And I've had a meeting with all my colleagues from Central Asia, and I've got the support from Secretary of State, because here we could be united and we could create what you're saying, the real security. Mm-hmm. And here the OSCE, through all these cross-border cooperation projects, could become a real player in this part of the world and in this particular question. Because I don't believe that, okay, here we'll do this, here with. Let's make one good success in one part of the OSCE, and it would be great, and it could help and restore the image of OSCE.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. My name is, Mr. Minister, my name is John Sandrock. I now work for a company called Analytic Services, Inc. I was the deputy head of mission and the acting head of mission for 6 months of the OSCE mission in Tajikistan, 1995-96, and then I went to the secretariat, and I was in the secretariat for almost 5 years, during a tremendous period of growth for the OSCE in the late 1990s. I left OSCE in 2001. My question is, during the late 1990s, there was tremendous growth. We opened up new missions in Central Asia and other places. I was generally the one who went out first to negotiate the MOUs with the foreign ministries in the concerned countries and so on. But it was a time also when there was a great deal of interest in the OSCE and a great deal of growth championed by the United States in particular, but also with very close support by the French, the Germans, and the other kind of big four, big five from the OSCE. I wonder, having been in the Troika for the last year, and this is my question, whether you see that sort of enthusiasm or whether you think it's necessary for the OSCE to rebuild its place in the international community, particularly in addressing some of the very difficult Eurasia issues. And if the situation of championship is not there, how do we generate, and I would do anything that I could to assist that process, how do we generate the type of enthusiasm, or how will the chairmanship try to generate that type of enthusiasm so that the OSCE really does become relevant again? And I'm not sure that it's relevant at the moment.
You know, it's a very tough question. I don't know, you know, how to inspire the countries to be in the same, to keep the same enthusiasm for years and years when you are seeing that something in some way is failing. I'm not a wizard, you know. Just I want to give you one example that, for example, for us to bring the question to discuss the Georgia issues, it took us, I think, from the April in EU, I'm talking about EU, not so much enthusiasm. That's what, but I believe in the success, in one story success. If we will achieve, let's say, what I'm talking now, let's take this Central Asia. If the countries will cooperate in strengthening and the border regimes, if the countries will cooperate in the cross-border cooperation, if we will succeed here, I think it could some trust in this organization could remerge. But also I would like to say that maybe from United States it looks that that OSCE is somehow, I don't know, it's losing. But just remember, please, ODIHR. You know what means ODIHR? For you, maybe it's, okay, here is the United States. For Lithuanians also, ODIHR. What does it mean, ODIHR? But for those countries, for those people, where they're struggling for democracy, where they're counting each vote, the opinion and the presence of ODIHR, long and short-term missions observation, it's incredibly important. That's what I wouldn't say that this organization, losing its ability to do something good for international cooperation. And for some countries, especially in the Central Asia, okay, we are members of NATO, we're members of EU, the very practical organizations, less or more, okay, we could criticize, but still very practical. But for some countries, OSCE is only one organization where they could meet, talk. And, you know, I don't want to mention these countries, but some countries are looking very serious to OSCE Parliamentary Assembly where we're going and meeting, because we have no other place except the United Nations, of course, field, if you may say so. That's what I would say. We need one success, which would show that this organization is still good, still valuable, and still usable.
Can I just add another, just to reinforce that? What you said is of such profound importance. It is often easy for the American audience to look, or the American perspective, to look at OSCE and to see a large, cumbersome organization that doesn't snap to quick decisions. Mm-hmm. But the long-term impact, when you think, and for me, when I envision the Helsinki principles, it's like a manifesto that people have used to dramatically transform their lives. And that remains true for many, many parts of the OSCE area. What is incumbent on us now, as governments who participate in the OSCE, I think, is to do exactly what the minister has laid out, which is not to pull tricks or like a magician, but to work on the practical steps to make progress, build momentum, which will then lead, I think, to what you're talking about, which is a greater political will inside the organization, proving that we've accomplished something and then going on to accomplish more in different areas. And the first ever Central Asian chairmanship, the first ever OSCE summit in Central Asia, I think will usefully highlight for all of us the role that OSCE can play in Central Asia.
Thank you.
This is why I'm not a professional. This is political. This is an organization that calls itself Security and Cooperation, but it's a political organization, notwithstanding the fact that nothing is legally binding, okay? It is a political organization. 70% of politics is perception. When the United States has a Secretary of State who, for every year he or she is in office, does not attend an OSCE summit, what kind of message is that saying? Now, if I'm in that situation where I'm representing the United States, as I was, and my secretary didn't come, frankly, I preferred having Nick Burns there because he would stay up until 2 or 3 in the morning negotiating with Lavrov and whatever, John Sawyers, and it was terrific. But the perception. So this secretary, who would have been at the last summit, at the last ministerial, had she not broken her elbow, already that perception, it seems to me, is changing the minds about where we are, where the United States is, or where the OSCE is with regard to the respect the United States. This recent discussion we've been having for the last few months in this city and Paris and in Vienna has been about lifting the OSCE. So I think it's going to be shorter than you think it is, but I think it's going to be a little longer than you may think it is. Before people figure out how to make this livable again and useful. When I was at the OSCE, for 3 years, we worked on an Afghan initiative. Now, the purpose was not for the United States to get in and do something else in Afghanistan. The idea was conceived because I was sitting around saying, it's odd, Afghanistan is a partner. Why aren't we helping somehow? But the Secretary of State at the time was not interested in having the OSCE involved. Now here you are. You're talking about aiding and abetting the rehabilitation of Afghanistan and doing something that, in my view, is entirely appropriate for the organization to be doing in that, too. Well, don't give up hope, but boy, it's tiny out there right now, what's happening.
Can I just make one quick action? I meant to say this. When I was the acting head of mission in Central Asia, of course, in Tajikistan, it was an ongoing civil war. During the Swiss chairmanship, I got an almost daily telephone call from Bern asking how the situation was going, what was going on, from the chairmanship in office directly. That was in addition to the discussions I had with Vienna and with the Secretariat. My recommendation is, if you encounter any kind of crisis, the closer you are to the head of mission and to the mission itself as a chairmanship, the more you will get the honest and true picture of what's going on over there, unfiltered by the Secretariat, unfiltered in other ways. And I would simply encourage you to consider that if there is a crisis situation someplace in the OSCE area of interest over the next year while you're the chairman in office, please, personal contact, not by you, but by one of your senior staff, obviously, would be very much appreciated and does feed the information process in a very important way. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for your advice.
Yeah. Jeff?
Good morning. Jeff Goldstein from the Open Society Institute. Mr. Minister, one of the things that make OSCE and the Community of Democracies different as international organizations is the role of non-governmental actors in them. And yet I think we saw at the review conference in Warsaw that there are some participating states in the OSCE that are not comfortable with that situation, with the failure of the seating of the Turkmen NGO delegates, with the fact that you had a bunch of new Kazakhstani NGOs showing up whose independence from the government is, well, shall we say, somewhat open to question. Does Lithuania have any plans during its chairmanship to try and reinforce the role of non-governmental actors in the OSCE?
You know, it's, when we started our preparations in for chairmanship, one of the first meeting what we've done, it was to invite the Lithuanian NGOs who consents and who could be involved and who could help us in various field, and discuss them and ask them help to cooperate. This is one thing. The second thing is when you were asking about encouraging of NGOs in the countries which I would say rather autocratic. Here, just one thing what I could say, that we always will react in one or another. We are not going to be passive observer. That's what just one thing what I could say you. We will be proactive, but you know, not just observers. Okay. Of course, it's also very subtle. You know that the countries, especially in the Central Asia, the essence is to be closed. It's even to get sometimes into one or another country. It needs some efforts. But I just could assure you that we will be active in expressing our opinion on one or another question. I've met, when I've started these preparations, I met, for example, Mrs. Dunja Mijatović, and she is a special envoy for freedom, for media freedom, and we've discussed with her how we are going to push these questions. Trying to put the safety of journalism and media freedom one of our angle in our priorities.
Okay. Back there.
Hi, my name is Sam Brown, and I had the privilege of being U.S. ambassador at the OSCE during the Clinton administrations. When, in fact, the perception, as Ambassador Finley points out, was quite different. Because the president actually attended the summits, the secretary actually came to the ministerial meetings, and perception was important, but substance was terribly important too. And I would say that OSCE, I could see overnight in OSCE a change in attitude the day the United States announced NATO expansion. It changed the attitude of the Russians about the future of their security relationship in Europe dramatically. They had at the time thought that OSCE could be for them a place of a level playing field where they could have a say over the things that happened to them. I think it's fair to say that from my Russian friends now, and I don't mean to sound like I'm speaking on behalf of the Russian Federation because I have grave problems with their current government, but from friends, I would say that they now see the OSCE too frequently as a place that simply beats up on them without giving them anything in return. That on both arms control and in terms even of ODIHR, they see it not as a place that brings something to them in the equation. And I would suggest and ask if there is any way that there is a kind of perceptual break that can take place. And I'm sorry Ambassador McElhaney isn't here to help answer that question. But is there a place where we can move that dialogue, not incrementally, but is there any large way to send both symbolically and substantively that message that we actually care about OSCE? Because, Steve, I think your comment that the Russians have given up on it, they would say they gave up on it because we gave up on it. We don't need to get into who did what to whom, but I think there's plenty of blame to go around for the current plight of OSCE, and there needs to be a breakthrough It seems to me the Russians have made a suggestion unacceptable to us. The question is, what suggestion might we make, or can the Lithuanian chairmanship make, that might bring more substance in a substantial way back that would bring the Russian Federation more closely back into OSCE?
No one chairman could convince country such as Russia or United States to change a policy and to change an attitude towards the organization. I think what the chairman could raise a question and show the possible way to resolve, to tackle one or another, to try to tackle one or another issue. That's what it's up to Russians to see how they value this organization, how they see and where they want to be in this organization. I'm going to Moscow, if I'm not mistaken, in January, and I will meet my counterpart, and we will discuss about the issues. But I just want to say one thing, that in Almaty Ministerial, in New York, we had short meetings on the margins of these meetings, and we discussed about some common projects where we could move ahead in this organization. And one of them, as I said, it's a cooperation with central countries in counter narcotics.
Mitchell Pullman, just to follow up on that, I was a long-term observer for the OSCE in Tajikistan and Kyrgyzstan, and I have to say it at lower levels at the OSCE, I mean, as somebody who's been a long-term observer twice this year, there's often an opposite sort of perception of the Russian role in OSCE because Russia seconds, the Russian government seconds quite a few observers, short-term and long-term, many of whom are very good, many of whom are not. And this is in spite of the fact that Russia itself does not allow ODIHR to observe its own elections. Now there are nationals from other countries such as Uzbekistan and Belarus that participate in ODIHR missions, but they're not seconded by their governments. So I would say that to some extent it's actually the opposite. There's a perception that rules are often bent for Russia in ways that they're not for other nations in ODIHR in terms of participating in election missions.
Erica Murat from Voice of America, Russian Service. I have a very concrete question. How are you going to react to elections in Belarus? Are you going to do anything provocative? Thanks.
First of all, we should wait the elections results, and after that we will see. But what I did, I recently visited Belarus together with our president, Madame Grybauskaitė, and we did our best convincing them, including my counterpart, Mr. Martinov, and President Lukashenko, to move and to show the signs of goodwill in conducting these elections in more democratic way. Of course, to make a miracle through the night, I think it's unrealistic. But at least we got some promises. We will see how these promises will be fulfilled. One thing, what this authority did, they did for sure. They registered almost all candidates who wanted to become a candidate. And we have now, I don't know, 12 candidates registered or something like that. It means at least that we are not, we put out ban for being registered. It's one of the signs. And after that we will see how things will go. But first of all, of course, we will discuss among the Troika member. The second, we should get the ODIHR's evaluation. And just on basis of ODIHR and OSCE parliamentary Assembly observations and European Council observations, we will make a statement. But to say in advance that we are going to react strongly, you know.
Do I have something to say about this?
Yeah,
I think I'll keep quiet on this.
Okay. Right up here in the front.
Scott Griffin, State Department. Just to follow up on that question, not to belabor the point too much, but do you think there's any danger in saying that we're looking for an improvement in elections? My understanding is one of the main issues with elections in Belarus is the vote counting, so that you could have an election in Belarus that, to all intents and purposes, looked very clean and fair, and even was very clean and fair up until the point of the actual vote count, which in the past has not been able to be observed by ODIHR observers. If we say, well, it's better because there was more media freedom, they registered 10 candidates this time, doesn't that sort of play into Lukashenko's hands? Isn't there a danger in doing that?
I don't think that we are saying that we are taking some risk. No way. I think the ODIHR will make the last judgment on these elections. And when I talked with my colleague, Mr. Martinov, I gave him such a paper where was described everything which would like to see, including the possibility for observers to be close to the ballot counting commission members.
What was his response?
The response was very simple. We will look at this.
It's not done.
We'll see. That's what I don't want to say something in advance. I would like rather to wait because they really allowed to come to a significant number of observers, and we'll see.
Okay. I think we have time for
But, of course, we are not going just to, I would say, for the sake of, I don't know, for what kind of, to keep silence if something will go wrong.
Okay, I think we have time for one last question in the very back there.
Yes, my name is Art Kaufman. I'm director of the World Movement for Democracy. You may know, Minister, that the World Movement has been working very closely with the government of Lithuania on preparations for various improvements and advances in the community of democracies, and we look forward to it. Participants in the World Movement around the world are very encouraged about the future of the community of democracies under the leadership of Lithuania, so we thank you for that. I just wanted to follow up very briefly on the point made by our colleague from OSI. As you may know, the Kazakh government, which is now chair of the OSCE, has decided not to hold a human dimension meeting alongside the ministerial in Astana at the end of this month. I think, as you may know, civil society groups in the region have decided to hold an alternative human dimension meeting of their own, and we wish it great success. What would be very moralizing, I think, for non-governmental groups, particularly in countries where OSCE is in fact the only institution available from the European side, it would be very moralizing to them to know very early on that the Lithuanian government, in its chairmanship of the OSCE, is in fact committed to holding the human dimension meeting alongside its ministerial when it holds it. Thank you.
I think it's no, for us, we have no problem with that. I just could say to you now and publicly that we will hold this meeting.
Okay.
I just want to, say one thing, it's just to share one of my experience, personal. I've just recently visited one of the founders of the Helsinki Watch Group in Lithuania, because this Helsinki Watch Group was founded, I don't know, 35 years ago, yes, something like that. And he is quite sick, this old gentleman. He spent 25 years in the prison, in Soviet prisons, different times. And I just, because I somehow treat him as a teacher, and I just, you know, try to explain what I'm doing, why I'm doing, what's the daily business, political business, just to entertain. And he listened, and after that said, because he talks very difficult, she said, just keep principles. That's it.
Okay, well, Mr. Minister, I think you're going to be going to have a very challenging year in 2011, but it sounds to me like you have exactly the right attitude to approach these tasks. So we wish you luck. We thank you very much for coming to Brookings today. Ambassador Finley, we thank you for joining us as well.
Thank you. Thank you for the invitation.